Each day in the U.S., about 130 people take their own lives. Well before the COVID-19 pandemic, dating back more than 20 years, the suicide rate has slowly but steadily increased, both in Wisconsin and nationwide, according to figures from the U.S. National Institute of Mental Health. While it is too early to know the long-term impact of the COVID-19 pandemic on mental health, researchers now suggest that the economic stress, social isolation, increased anxiety, and restrictions on in-person mental health visits could be contributing to new increases in suicide rates among both children and adults. This is a disturbing trend, but advocates say suicide is preventable. By starting the conversation, providing support, and directing help to those who need it, we can, as a community, prevent suicides and save lives. Welcome to Route 51. I'm Shireen Seewert. Suicide, the 10th leading cause of death in America, is a complex public health issue. It calls for coordination and cooperation among healthcare providers, individuals and family members, treatment services, and the community as a whole. Evidence shows that providing support services, talking about suicide, reducing access to means of self-harm, understanding the risk factors and warning signs to watch for, and maintaining regular contact with loved ones are just some of the actions we can all take to help others find support, hope, and recovery. Joining us today is Brian Michael, who is the Director of Prevention Services at Mental Health America of Wisconsin. Brian, thank you for being here and welcome to Route 51.
Hi, thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
Sarah Kolbeck, Director of the Division of Suicide Prevention at the Medical College of Wisconsin, is also here today. Welcome, Sarah.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
And our third guest is clinical psychologist Bertrand Berger, Mental Health Division Manager at the Zablocki VA Medical Center. He's an assistant psychiatry professor at the Medical College of Wisconsin as well. Bert, thank you so much for being here today and taking the time to talk with us.
Yeah, thank you. Good morning, everybody. It's a pleasure to be here and talk about this important subject.
Listeners, if you have questions, you are encouraged to join the conversation. Just call us at 800-780-9742. You can email us too, route51@wpr.org. Brian, I'd like to start with you. Tell us about Mental Health America of Wisconsin. What is it and what's your role there?
Sure. So Mental Health America of Wisconsin is the statewide affiliate of the National Mental Health America organization. So we provide mental health advocacy, education, services, and resources all across Wisconsin to really a variety of populations. We have focused programs for children, adolescents, for veterans, for families who live with mental health issues, really anybody who could benefit from increased access to any of the resources that are going to help them lead a mentally healthier life. And in my role there, I lead the non-clinical side of our prevention services. So it's largely coordinating our suicide prevention programming, which includes improving how healthcare organizations provide suicide care and screening and assessment. We put on an annual conference to provide resources to treatment providers, advocates, people with lived experience, teaching them on new developments or new resources in suicide prevention. And we also run a couple of programs, including a peer-run respite house for veterans, providing them with peer support by individuals who have shared some of their lived experiences, as well as providing a non-crisis warm line for folks of either veteran status or anybody who identifies with the LGBTQ community to call and get support.
A lot of resources there. So Sarah, until last week, I didn't even know that the Medical College of Wisconsin had a division of suicide prevention. Tell us about that.
Yeah. So the division is relatively new. We were just established about a year ago as a part of the Comprehensive Injury Center, which is a center focused on the prevention of both intentional and unintentional injury across the state of Wisconsin. And so the Division of Suicide Prevention is really an academic partner for community organizations and other groups who are engaged in suicide prevention efforts. We partner with community-based organizations across the state in the implementation and evaluation of suicide prevention programming. And some of the projects that we're working on involve, suicide among veterans. I work closely with both Dr. Berger and Brian on those programs, and also programs targeting suicide among middle-aged men and farmers around the state of Wisconsin.
And Bert, I know that the three of you work together frequently and you know each other well, but tell us about your role as a mental health division manager at the Zablocki VA Medical Center.
Yeah, so I've been at the VA for 30 years. It's just a wonderful career to take care of veterans and provide care for them. So at the Zablocki VA, we have a huge comprehensive mental health program. So about 400 plus staff actually provide mental health services at our facility, as well as Appleton, Green Bay, Cleveland, Wisconsin, and Union Grove. And then we're connected with the network of facilities throughout the state. So Tomah, Madison, Iron Mountain, they're all part of our VA network. So our resources include from walking in the door, we have urgent care where someone can walk into the hospital and be seen by a psychiatrist the same day. You can't really get that much in the community. It probably takes you a month or so, maybe more. So you have that. We have inpatient services. We have rehabilitation services like a domiciliary, which is like residential care. You can be there 6 months or 6 weeks or longer for care there. We have voc rehab, extensive outpatient services, as well as homeless prevention services that go throughout our system as well. So we're all really connected in the different programs that we have.
Absolutely. Well, we know that understanding the issues concerning suicide and mental health can help others in crisis and change the conversation around suicide. So I'd like to start off by talking about risk factors, the factors contributing to suicide. Obviously, they are very complex. But Brian, let's start with you. What are some of the risk factors that have been identified so far?
Well, obviously, a lot of people assume that there's always a big connection between suicide and mental health, and the facts show that that's not always the case. What we do know is that approximately 50% of the people who die by suicide do have a mental health diagnosis, but that leaves another half out there who either haven't been diagnosed or aren't living with a mental health condition. There's a lot of environmental and situational factors that can lead somebody into the feeling and the feelings of despair, where they might feel like ending their own life is their only option. A lot of times that can be affected by intimate partner issues, by job and financial issues, by housing insecurity. So a focus that has been growing in the prevention community is really looking at those upstream prevention factors. So rather than waiting until somebody is actually presenting at the emergency room or presenting at a hospital or for psychiatric care, what can we do to keep them from reaching that point to begin with? If we can help them to maintain their housing stability, if we can help people to stay in a fiscally comfortable or at least help them financially so that they don't find themselves in dire straits where they have to weigh their options of paying for food or paying for rent or paying for childcare. Are there other resources regarding issues for people who do have domestic partner issues or intimate partner violence that they're struggling with? Or is it individuals, younger folks who might be struggling with their own identity and they're dealing with harassment and bullying either at school, not feeling accepted by their family? So there's a lot of different factors that can lead into that. And a big part of that is addressing, looking at what are the reasons that we learn about lives, people's lives before they die by suicide, and how can that inform our prevention efforts by trying to reduce the impact of those risk factors upstream before it gets to that point where they find themselves in crisis.
Sure. We'll delve more deeply into veterans issues a little bit later in the program, but Bert, are there some risk factors that are specific to veterans that you really watch for?
Yeah. So veterans are a very proud population. So they really don't want to show weakness. So when veterans begin talking about suicide, or if there's indication that they seem to be isolating, they seem to not be doing their usual kind of routine, that could be a sign that something is going on. Because veterans are not necessarily going to talk about these issues unless you ask them. So it's really important to reach out and ask somebody if you notice something's different. Some other risk factors, other than the pride and wanting to tough it out and do their best until they can't do it anymore. Some of the other things is that veterans tend to have firearms. And firearms are extremely dangerous, of course, the most lethal way to die from suicide. And veterans use a firearm 70% of the time when there is a suicide, versus civilians use it about 50% of the time. So it's bad either way, but veterans tend to own firearms, own more firearms, and really, of course, are trained to use them. So again, that's another factor, as well as veterans, some have gone through combat situations, they've gone through other stressors and other things that may make them more susceptible to some mental health problems. So those issues can also be a factor. PTSD is a risk factor for suicide, as well as depression. And sometimes veterans have difficulty with relationships, and that can also be a factor, as Brian had mentioned.
I want to remind listeners with questions for our guests, you are welcome to call us at 800-780-9742 or email route51@wpr.org. And if you or someone you love is contemplating suicide, please call the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline at 800-273-8255. It is important to point out that not everyone who has risk factors for suicide will take their own lives. Brian, you made that point. I'd like to ask, what should we be watching for? What are some signs that somebody in our life is struggling and really needs help? Sarah, what should I be watching for?
Absolutely. I'm going to echo something that Dr. Berger said, in that it's really important to watch for kind of different behaviors that you would not expect that person to be exhibiting. So certainly, you know, increases in alcohol or drug use, for example, can certainly be a warning sign. You know, talking about suicide, you know, sometimes people will say something like, you know, I, you know, would be better off if I wasn't here, or I feel like I'm a burden to my family. Those are things that need to be taken seriously. And what I like to tell people when I'm talking about suicide is, you need to assume that you are the only person that's going to reach out. Don't assume that somebody else is going to do that.
We're back on Route 51. I'm Shireen Seward. Bert Berger, Sarah Kolbeck, and Brian Michael are our guests today for a discussion on suicide prevention, from risk factors to warning signs and ways to both give and get help. We'd like to hear your thoughts too. Email us at route51@wpr.org or join us by phone at 800-780-9742. So Sarah, these have been especially difficult times for farmers in rural areas of Wisconsin. We see this so often, the financial pressures, the long hours, the labor shortages. I mean, there's so many things that contribute to this. And I know that you have done some extensive research about this issue. What did you learn?
Yeah, I want to start out by saying that I come to this work from a place of this being a passion project. My grandfather was a dairy farmer in Mishicot, Wisconsin in the 70s and 80s. And so I'm very familiar with farm life, at least as it existed back then. I know things have changed so much. So a recent study that we conducted and that's been published in the Journal of Rural Health looked at data from the Wisconsin Violent Death Reporting System, which collects narrative information on all suicides that happen in our state. And what we learned was that there were a couple of themes that were present in the suicides among farmers who died. We noticed that, as you mentioned, Shireen, really the burden of farming and the farm. You know, we know farming is a 24/7, 365 job. It's not a job that's a 9-to-5 that you leave at the end of the day. And so, you know, that unique burden that farmers experience can be very overwhelming. It can also feel like, you know, a little bit of, you know, of a trap sometimes, you know, kind of feeling like there's no way out. And so that unique burden, I think some of the other issues that we have explored and looked at is, you know, grief and loss of relationships is certainly a major issue. And I think oftentimes in farming communities and in rural communities in general, you know, we have a very stoic sort of culture, where you deal with your feelings. You don't necessarily talk about your feelings. But then unfortunately, when somebody doesn't, you know, receive help or talk about their feelings, it might build up and suicide might become a viable option. So certainly when someone is experiencing grief, especially somebody who might not talk about it or might not have access to services, it's important to reach out. And then I will also echo what Dr. Berger said about firearms. Many farmers, most farmers who are currently farming in the state have firearms. I was just talking to a farmer this week who said, of course I do. I've got to kill varmints, you know, so these are easily accessible. And there is a reason to have them. However, when someone's in a suicidal crisis, I think we need to be talking about how we can safely store those until that crisis has passed and that individual has a chance to get resources.
Brian, I want to ask you about something that I saw on the Mental Health America of Wisconsin website. There is a very clear and specific message there. It says, good mental health is fundamental to the health and well-being of every person and of the nation as a whole. We want all people to understand how to protect and improve their mental health and know when to seek help for themselves or someone close to them. That brings up a point I'd like to address. It is hard to admit we need help. How does your organization work to reach people and really convince them to seek that help when they need it?
One of the biggest ways that I think we can help people to reach out to seek help when they need it is to really destigmatize the conversation around suicide and mental health treatment in general. I think there's a false separation, a false dichotomy between physical health and mental health. They really do feed right into each other, because if you're not taking care of yourself physically, it's going to affect your mental health. Your nutrition, your exercise, your physical environment will have a direct effect on your mental health and your mental well-being. So I think just breaking down that stigma that there's no reason why somebody should feel any different going to a mental health professional as they would if they were feeling ill or if they had broken a bone. It's really, you know, it's taking care of your health. It's also important that we make sure that people can access either any screening tools or, you know, to really learn about what they're feeling and why they're feeling that. I think it's the sense of validation that really helps, that I think isn't always present in other with other issues. So when you're, you know, if you have a adolescent child who's coming up to you saying how much they're struggling, it's important to recognize that this could be the most pain this young person has felt in their life. And while it might be something incidental, or as an adult, as a parent, you might see how temporary it is to this young person, this is all that they're seeing in front of them. So when we see that suicide is the second leading cause of death among adolescents in Wisconsin, it's really important to take those comments seriously and to make sure that we're hearing people when they come to us. Like Sarah said, it's important to ask that question. So if you are worrying about somebody in your life, it's important to ask that question, because we know that asking somebody about suicide is not going to put that idea in their head. It's not going to cause them, it's not going to put them at greater risk just because you're asking about it. But also it's important to know what to do after asking that question too, because people can, you know, people might feel either that they don't want to ask if they don't know what to do, or the person on the other side, you know, might disclose that they're feeling that way, but then not have anything not have any place to go after that. So it's important to know those resources. The Mental Health America website offers lots of those resources. We also have the website at preventsuicidewi.org. That is the Prevent Suicide Wisconsin website. That really leads and coordinates our suicide prevention efforts across the state and provides some really local resources everywhere from Milwaukee to Manitowoc to all the way up to Ashland and Bayfield, that we have coalitions and local coalitions there with resources that can support anybody in the state.
I want to let listeners know we will have a list of resources on our website at wpr.org/route51. The Crisis Text Line is a texting service for emotional crisis support. If you would like to speak with a trained listener, you can text HELLO to 741741. This is a free service. It's available 24/7 and it is confidential. I'd like to shift a little bit to talk more about veterans. We talked a little bit earlier in the program, Bert, about how veterans think they're so tough. I mean, they're the ones we count on, right? Mm-hmm. To be the strong ones in our lives. So how do you persuade veterans who are so used to being the ones that we count on to ask for help?
Yeah, well, that's a real good question, because they really don't want to talk about it. And we have plenty of veterans that will have seen in our primary care clinics, and they may never come to our mental health clinic because they've died from suicide before doing that. So we do a lot of screening, even in our primary care clinics. So we ask veterans if they're feeling suicidal, if they have depression and things like this. So it can be the mental health and could be the doctor asking those questions. But with veterans that are just kind of doing their thing and they're trying to do their best, it's really the people around them. It's the people around them that can really help by reaching out. And sometimes it's not always depression, anxiety, like we've been talking about. For men, sometimes it's more anger. They could be angry. They could be, you know, just not seeming right, aggressive and agitated more than usual. And if that's happening, that's a good time to just ask, what's going on? You know, how are you feeling? Something must be not right for you. And if you can get the person to talk a little bit about it, and most people will talk, but it is sometimes difficult to get them to kind of start talking. But when someone talks about some things they're dealing with, that's the time when you can ask them those questions and find out. And a lot of times with a crisis, you know, it can be a temporary thing. The person could be really feeling bad for a couple of hours and all of a sudden they're feeling better. And like, why was I even thinking about suicide? I don't even know. I wish that wouldn't even come into my head because I was that close to dying. So sometimes it's a real temporary thing. And if someone can make an intervention in a short period of time, they can save a life. So it's really noticing some of the things we're talking about and trying to kind of get the person just to say something, get them to change what they're doing, get them to do something a little different. Tell them, hey, let's go fishing. You know, you're kind of agitated. Let's go do something.
So kind of redirect them and get them thinking about something else. Bert, I know you're working on a research project developing a statewide public health awareness campaign for veterans to help prevent suicides. Just tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, so this is really exciting work because it's through the Advancing Healthier Wisconsin grant through the medical college, and Sarah's co-principal investigator with me on this project, and this really started from a CDC grant that I attempted to get, which was to look at developing firearm storage facilities throughout the state where people could, when in a crisis, take a gun to a gun shop so that they have it out of their home. And my concept was that lethal means is a way that we can actually prevent suicide. So that means if you have guns that are not so accessible, it's possible that people will less likely die from that gun. So the concept is a voluntary program, develop as gun shops throughout the state of Wisconsin. And then with that, do a public awareness around the dangers of guns and veterans and share the gun shop project that's throughout the state. So the public health awareness is to make people aware of the dangers of the firearms when in crisis, and that and also for veterans to make that awareness, like, suicide is out there. If you're feeling bad, there are resources for you that you can call the crisis line. And that's one thing that we have as part of our project is the resources available for veterans throughout the state as part of this. We have a website that part of this project is reachoutwis.org. So it's all about reaching out, as we're talking about. And the idea of the project is to develop a public health awareness for veterans that is developed by veterans. So we're having focus groups that are helping develop our message. And before we send out the advertising or this awareness campaign, we're doing a survey across the state of Wisconsin, asking people their opinions about, have they seen advertising about veterans and suicide and firearms? And we want to kind of understand what people's knowledge is at a base level, do this public awareness campaign, see again how well people understand some of this, and see if we reached out and connected with anybody. And then we're going to do two more campaigns after we do that first one to see if we can improve our method. And then we're going to measure this and really hopefully make a difference.
Okay.
By getting the message out there.
Brian, you wanted to add some context to that about impulsivity and the way that people think. What did you want to add?
Sure. Yeah. Kind of building on what both Sarah and Dr. Berger said, when we're talking about farmers and veterans and access to firearms, it's important to note that oftentimes the decision that somebody makes before they die by suicide is a very impulsive decision. Statistics show that approximately 50% of deaths from suicide occur within 20 minutes of that person making that decision to take their life. So if there's any amount of time that we can cause to interrupt that decision, it can really be significant to prevent that person from dying by suicide. So whether that's whether that's encouraging people to use gun locks and to keep their firearms unloaded and their ammunition separate, whether that's encouraging them to use medication lock boxes in their homes if they worry about anybody, including themselves, in their house, because we also know that if one method fails, people are often, if somebody survives one attempt, they're not often likely to try another means. They're not often likely to try another way to take their life. So it's that means matter is really something that phrase is throughout suicide prevention literature and data. So really understanding that it's a lot different when you have access to more lethal means to take your life, like having a firearm at your disposal. Suicide by firearm is far more lethal than all of the other methods really combined. So making sure that people who are facing those challenges, that they do have a way not only that they can keep themselves safe, but that they also feel that whatever methods are being used to keep them safe, that they have a stake in that they still feel that their personal choice is being respected. So when Dr. Berger's talking about the voluntariness of that program, of the firearm, of surrendering your firearm temporarily, it's really important that that's the person, those are more effective when it's that person coming to that decision and being able to make those decisions for themselves too.
Sure. Thank you. Sarah, I want to talk a little bit about young people. CDC reporting that teen suicide rates increased during the pandemic. And very recently, a Facebook whistleblower spoke to Congress about the potential dangers associated with Instagram, especially among young people, teen girls among the most affected. What's going on with young people here?
Yeah, I can speak to this personally. I have a 17-year-old daughter, so I certainly understand the pressures of social media. I think that, one of the things about social media is that there is an ability and a tendency to say things to somebody that you wouldn't necessarily say in person.
We're back on Route 51. I'm Shireen Seward. Sarah Kolbeck, Bert Berger, and Brian Michael are our guests today as we continue our discussion on suicide prevention strategies and ways to take action in our communities. Your thoughts are welcome. Email us at route51@wpr.org or join us by phone if you have questions for our guests. The number to call is 800-780-9742. The National Suicide Prevention Lifeline is 800-273-8255. So what kinds of things do psychologists and psychiatrists ask when screening patients for the risk of suicide? I know whenever I go to the doctor, you know, they ask me these questions. I mean, but when you're really getting down to trying to find out, is this person really thinking about this? What kinds of questions do they ask? And is that helpful, Bert?
Yeah, so there's some standardized questionnaires that people can actually go and take the questionnaire themselves. One is called the Columbia Suicide Risk Assessment Device, and that's you can find it online. And if you're positive for that, there's resources that you can link to get help if you do score high. So some of the basic questions are just, are you feeling hopeless? Are you feeling depressed? Are you have thoughts of suicide? I mean, the questions are quite direct. And once you've kind of discovered that the person is feeling depressed and having some thoughts of suicide, then we start asking, well, when did you start having these thoughts of suicide? When did they start? Have you had a previous suicide attempt? If they've had a previous suicide attempt, that may be an indication that this is happening again for that person. And then you really want to find out, well, okay, how serious was that attempt in the past? Find out some details. What was the thoughts that you had to use to die from suicide? Were you thinking of a firearm? Were you thinking of poison? Were you going to hang yourself? What were the actual factors? And then also to find out if they sought help at the time. So how likely are they to seek help is an important factor to kind of know whether they would then try to get some help. And once you kind of get some of that background, then you really want to focus in on the current situation. And that's asking about their current thoughts. Are they have thoughts to do this soon? How long have they been having those thoughts? How serious are the thoughts? Do they have a plan that they've developed of when they might do it? So a lot of times sometimes people will have a serious plan and really have intent to do it. And that's when you need to get someone immediate help. That may sometimes mean calling the police so you can get some help to get the person the help they need in case they say, I'm not getting help, I'm going to go do it. Sometimes you have to do that is really get immediate help. And that's what we've had to do sometimes when we work with veterans or in the healthcare system. Other people may not have as much of that intensity, but they have that depression and the suicidal thoughts. And that's a point where you might be able to connect them into some healthcare, some mental health support, have them see a counselor, maybe consider medication if the depression or other mental health issues are there.
It sounds like when I hear the three of you talk, it sounds like this is not a simple solution, but there are a lot of facets to helping change the direction of suicide. So what about a legislative standpoint? I mean, is there anything that can be done from a legislative standpoint that could help in this effort? Sarah, I see you nodding your head. So what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, so I think one thing that's really important to suicide prevention is understanding what happens when folks die by suicide and why. One of the things that we have been working on from a legislative standpoint is trying to standardize the way that data around suicides are collected in the state of Wisconsin so that we can get a better picture of what's happening. You know, a lot of times the data are in different places. They're not super complete data. And really, we're basing our prevention programs on this information. So legislatively, that's absolutely something that can be done, is helping to standardize those investigations so that the data that we're basing our suicide prevention programming on are a little bit more sound. And I know I've worked with Brian on other legislative priorities as well. So certainly there is space for this policy discussion in suicide prevention.
Brian, what are some misconceptions about suicide? What do you wish people would better understand about the whole issue?
So there's a couple. As we mentioned earlier, a lot of people think that everybody who dies by suicide either suffers from depression or bipolar or some other mental health diagnosis, when oftentimes a lot of suicides occur because of or are very directly related to environmental factors in that person's life, often external factors. So whether it's financial burdens, things like that, that we can support and increase those protective factors so people don't find themselves in those dire straits. I think that, as we also said before, people might believe that by asking somebody about if they're thinking about taking their life or if they're thinking about suicide, that might push them over the edge. That's simply not the case. We know that that's not how that works. And people who are asked about their thoughts about suicide, that doesn't make them more likely to die by suicide. But also, I wanted to build on a little bit on what Sarah said also is that, not only in our through legislation do we need to focus on really just making better data and gathering more complete data across the state, but we really need investment, financial resources to invest in suicide prevention in Wisconsin. MHA is our we lead the infrastructure building for Wisconsin suicide prevention programming, and in that role we get to interface a lot with other states and see how their infrastructure around suicide is built, and many other states have dedicated funding in their legislature every year coming out for suicide prevention, directed towards suicide prevention activities. Wisconsin certainly doesn't have it to that extent. A lot of our funding is either tied to federal grants that have to be connected to people who are receiving or people who suffer from serious mental illness, when, like we said, a lot of suicides can be affected by environmental factors. So really informing legislators and informing the community that without the financial investment, a lot of these programs and activities and prevention strategies that are out there are run either by volunteers or by people who are taking on these activities in addition to what their ordinary job duties would be as far as, joining coalitions and participating in those groups.
Since we're talking about strategies, the VA developed the National Strategy for Preventing Veteran Suicide a few years ago. I was reading about this as we were preparing for the show, and I guess I'm wondering, Bert, what kinds of initiatives do you think are we going to see moving forward? How is this going to evolve?
Yeah, that's a really good question. So in the VA system, we've really focused on what we call suicide prevention 1.0, which is really developing our clinical services. So when someone comes to the VA and they're looking for mental health services, that we have the full continuum of services to provide so we can prevent the suicide of that person that's coming in seeking help. The next step that we're working on in the VA system as a whole is we call suicide prevention 2.0. And 2.0 is really the VA reaching out to the community and developing coalitions that are focused on suicide prevention for veterans. And so we have community resource staff that do this in our facilities through Milwaukee, Green Bay, Madison, Toma, and Iron Mountain is kind of part of us in a way in our system. They kind of reach that northern, northeastern part of the state for us as well. And what we're developing are task forces or coalitions in each of these areas. In southeastern Wisconsin, we've developed a BeThereWis.com website, which details out the different task force we're doing. So the whole idea is to bring the community together around veteran suicide prevention. Because the VA, we realize we can't just do it our own. We can't just kind of be a silo and have people come to us. We need to reach out because these issues are in the community as a whole. The veterans live in the community and experiencing the same things everybody else is. So the community needs to be supportive for veterans for us to make a difference with veterans. So we're developing these coalitions and task force with various priority areas. Some of them is just for people to understand veteran culture. That's a really important thing if you're a veteran. Kind of knowing how to work with a veteran is really important. And then for veterans that leave active military service, a huge factor is that transition. The first year out of the military is a difficult time for veterans. And the reason for that is they've had a really important, powerful mission throughout their time in the military. And they leave that, and now they're back to civilian life. And for some of them, it's like, okay, what do I do? You know, I had some really important things I did. Now coming to civilian life, it can kind of seem like kind of boring. You're like, what am I gonna, you know, we wanna help them kind of develop their new mission, develop back their connection with their families, their jobs, their churches, their spiritual life, whatever that might be that they've not had a connection to. Because the military is a whole different culture versus living in everyday life. I would say it's like you asked the question, like what we're doing is that reach out, the reach out factor from the VA perspective.
And Brian, you wanted to talk about the impact and response report. What is that resource?
Yeah, thanks. So similar to the veteran strategy for suicide prevention, there's also a general national strategy for suicide prevention, and that informed the creation and recent revision of Wisconsin's suicide prevention strategy, which is outlined in a document that was released in 2020. That's called the Suicide in Wisconsin Impact and Response. So it's a lengthy document, but it includes a number of resources, not only sharing a lot of data regarding suicide, but also includes the Wisconsin State Plan for Suicide Prevention, which closely follows that national plan, but it includes really four main strategies of increasing protective factors, increasing access to care for at-risk populations. So the people that we know might be suffering or more at risk, like veterans, like farmers, like people living in rural areas, implementing best practices in healthcare systems. So improving how hospitals and healthcare systems might screen and assess for suicide care, but also improving that surveillance of suicide data and interpretation, evaluation of that data. So in that report, there's over 50 different recommended activities for either individuals or organizations to learn about and see how they can implement those strategies and advance those strategies in their community.
And Sarah, very quickly, what about some resources that are specific to farmers? What can you share with us?
Yeah, so the Wisconsin Farm Center, which is through the Wisconsin Department of Agriculture, has some really great resources that are specific to farmers. They do have a 24/7 wellness hotline that farmers can call for any sort of issue. Doesn't have to be a mental health issue, can be financial issues or other issues as well. Governor Evers recently appropriated funds for a counseling voucher program for farmers as well to visit a mental health professional in their area. And so that is available through the Wisconsin Farm Center's website as well. There are also some couples workshops that are designed for couples to come together and talk about some of their stressors related to farming. You can find information on those again through the Wisconsin Farm Center's website. I just want to call attention to that site. It's a wealth of information and resources for farmers in the state of Wisconsin and for their families related to mental health, but also some of the other stressors that farmers face, financial stressors and things of that nature. finally, I just want to highlight a podcast called Rural Realities that is available in the state of Wisconsin that shares resources on mental health as well as other resources that are relevant to farmers in our state.
Thank you very much for that. And I want to remind listeners that we will have a list of resources on our website at wpr.org/route51. The lifeline, the suicide prevention lifeline, is 800-273-8255. And the crisis text line, text HELLO to 741741. Those are free, available 24/7 and confidential services. That is all we have time for today on Route 51. I'm Shireen Seward. Thanks to our guests, Brian Michael from Mental Health America of Wisconsin, Sarah Kolbeck from the Division of Suicide Prevention at the Medical College of Wisconsin, and Bertrand Berger of the Zablocki VA Medical Center. Our executive producer is Rick Ryer, who is also our on-air producer today. Thanks to John Altenberg for the Route 51 theme. You can hear the archive of today's program at wpr.org/route51. Next week, a look at the controversial wolf hunt happening in Wisconsin, and in 2 weeks, more about the history and tradition of the Amish people. Until then, we're heading out of town.